Red Cow Arcade.
Rocky IV, Rocky versus Drago, Ultimate Cut, Master Cut, Extra Duper Cut. For those unfamiliar, Sylvester Stallone was shooting a movie called Samaritan, which is not out yet. There's not even a trailer out for it yet, but it's like a highly anticipated thing. It's one of his passion projects. But they had to pause shooting during COVID. He wanted to continue at his at the ripe old age of 74 or whatever he is. He wanted to continue doing something creative. And he said, I'd like to go back to one of the Rocky movies and re-edit them, like from scratch, like go to the raw footage and re-edit it. Now, why Rocky IV has been the question. And his answer is, well, because it was the highest grossing of all of them. It's kind of like the closest thing to a Rocky blockbuster that he ever had. So MGM would maybe be like, all right, well, that one maybe has a really good chance at bringing back some money. Because they probably, he probably thought, like, even though Rocky V could benefit the most, he probably felt like Rocky V is the one that people would be least interested in seeing a recut of.
Yeah, it's the one that's most, like, memed. It's the one that's, like, probably the first you think of in your consciousness when you think of Rocky. Like, it's peak. And it's peak 80s, peak Cold War, peak all that stuff, peak montage, everything.
And that's precisely why he felt like he had something new to bring to it, because he was like, it's such a product of its time. And I'm sure he was feeling like, you know, the first Rocky obviously is a product of the 70s, but it's survived, you know, many different creative eras very well. Rocky II is kind of the same way. Rocky III is another very 80s one. You could almost, like, I was thinking, you could almost take Rocky III and Rocky IV. They're almost kind of companion movies with the Apollo arc. And you could kind of squash them into one movie, like a 2.5 hour experience.
It's hard to do that.
We talked a lot about the Snyder Cut, because the Snyder Cut was a really unusual situation where it was like, I didn't, you know, the movie that was released was not one I worked on. You know, I shot that footage, but I did not have anything to do with the completion of that movie. Plus, there were pickups that were shot completely without Snyder. So it's like an unreleased version, you know, like a completely different version of the film that was unreleased. So like director's cut doesn't do it justice. I feel like historically director's cut has meant like, you know, I would have done it this way without studio interference.
Yeah.
Generally. And for a while during the DVD era, that meant like, a couple of extra scenes or scenes that got to go on a bit longer because the studio said like, cut it down or let's, you know, keep the rhythm going or something.
And then there's some rare examples, like was the Kingdom of Heaven, where it's a basically completely different and better movie, but.
Or Richard Donner's Superman is another one like that.
But usually it's like a couple more scenes added. Nothing crazy.
There's there was an Exorcist movie, I think, too, where they just like remade the whole movie after it failed.
Yeah, there's like two versions of an Exorcist. Is it like a prequel or something?
This is another really unique situation where it's like the guy who directed it released the movie in the era that it was released in, 1985, and then 40 years passed, and he went back to the raw film. Truly, they went back to they had to restore it, and he said it was really really deteriorated. In fact, he mentioned that the original film, not like they have like working prints and stuff, but the original film shot for Rocky I, it's gone. Somebody just threw it out. It just doesn't exist anymore. So they wouldn't be able to do this kind of treatment on that film, but they did have this. And, you know, he was like, it was really challenging to do because I'm looking at takes that I haven't looked at since 1985. Like, I don't know what we shot. Like, it's been 40 years and I don't know what we shot. And we would like, you know, as they were reconstructing the narrative, they would find takes that complemented this new vision that they had for the movie, but the film would deteriorate like a little too early, or the take would stop or whatever. And so it became this total hack job. But I think he went in there thinking, I'm going to try to bring something new to Rocky IV. And then once he got his hands on it, once he was in all of the raw footage, seeing all this stuff for the first time in 40 years, having a different vision for the film than the one he originally wrote, like truly a different pass at the story in the edit. I think that he was like, I'm going to redo this whole thing, which is so cool. And I feel like it's such like a privilege, you know, that he's still as vibrant and clear-headed and smart and evolved as he is that he could even take this on. I think it's just the best.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a little bit. I didn't watch the whole documentary. I watched enough to understand it. But he is just so, yeah, he's so, you know, he's reflecting about his decisions that he made back then, or some of the decisions that were like made for him. He's like, there's like, I don't know why these announcers are here. Like, I didn't say yeah. yes to this. I don't know where they came from. Like, I have amnesia. Yeah. I don't understand why they're in this movie.
And I have a lot of sympathy for, like, you know, he was saying, like, I've probably watched this movie 100 times since we made it. And, you know, you live forever with the things about a movie that you wish you could change and you wish you could fix. And so there were all these little, they were discovering, yeah, if people, I think it's like slyshop.com or something, but they released a feature length documentary about him recutting this. And I think that's really an important thing to watch if you're interested in this recut, because it's nothing, it's 90 minutes of insight about the decisions that they made.
It's like him in a room with an editor and that's it, and then like in him pontificating about the movie and like his decisions. It's great.
And about life, like about like the philosophies that go that kind of underpin Rocky. And so most people know I'm a huge Rocky fan, like unironically, obviously the first, the second, the sixth, Creed 1 is very good, but yeah, I think most people love those movies and can recognize the artfulness in those movies. But 3 and 4, so 5 everybody kind of agrees is bad, but I would say that 5 is more like a B-. I think it's kind of overstated just how bad it is. I still think it's a pretty watchable movie in the scheme of things. If you were going to marathon all Rocky movies, like, look, there are some really bad movies in the world, and Rocky 5 is not that bad. It's just kind of like, it's mistaken. Mm-hmm. They across Rocky Balboa and Creed, they kind of retread all of Rocky Five, all of the concepts and philosophies in Rocky Five. They just do better later. So you could just skip over it, I suppose. I look at it as it's a bad episode or a not so great episode in a great TV series. That's how it should be looked at. I'll say this: it was awful when it was the last
movie. yeah but now that there's a lot more in the canon,
it dilutes the effect.
And you know, so with me with Rocky, it's like I appreciate Rocky. It's almost like the Mega Man series. Like, I appreciate Mega Man, I'll play Mega Man, I like Mega Man, but it's not my favorite, you know. I know it's like it's a really great thing. Like, so the last time I watched Rocky IV was 20 years ago. So I'm like coming to this, and I saw the movies that came out after too. Like, I saw Rocky Balboa when it was in theaters. I liked it a lot. I saw Creed and Creed 2. So I'm coming to it as somebody who saw each film. Basically, I didn't see, obviously the movie came out when I was born, but I saw it 20 years ago. So I'm seeing these like in time within my life. And so it's interesting with only like the vague outline of what I remember of the script. Like, I remember Rocky is rich. He has a robot. Polly wants to fuck it. I don't know. Apollo Creed wanted to fight the Russian. He dies. And then there's a bunch of montages and Rocky fights the Russian and he wins. That's what I remember.
The Rockies used to televise all the time. And, like when I was a kid, and I saw the end of the second one was the first exposure I ever had to a Rocky film, when he was running and all of the kids were chasing after him. This is very cinematic and of course corny, but it was like just a cool, like, you know, it was a very memorable thing to see. And then the fight was, those fights are really unique because there's no other, you can't point to another boxing movie that has fights like that. They're basically third act battles with villains. They're much more similar to superhero films than they are anything else, which I think is why they resonate the way they do. It's more mythology and stuff. But then the next one I saw for some reason was Rocky IV. So I saw them totally out of order. And I remember one Christmas I got 1 through 4 in like a Fox Video or something case. Yeah, and I remember like my dad being like, "Yeah, he fights the Russian." And it was the first time I ever heard of what a Russian was. You know, so it was like I had no context for what I was watching. But as the years went on, and you know, I gained appreciation for the other films. Yes. I always viewed 3 and then even more so 4 as when he lost the thread is kind of what I thought of it. I was like, he, you know, what started as a Cinderella story. I think the first Rocky has almost like an eternal folk tale kind of quality about it. Almost like the story of Jesus or, you know, the story about like somebody self-actualizing. I feel like you could point to a ton of other stories from the beginning of time, similar to Rocky, and kind of like how Star Wars resonates in this unexpected way. Rocky, I think, resonates in that same unexpected way. It's not doing something crazy and new. It's doing something very, very, very old and just doing it really well. But then by the time he becomes like a gladiator and a superhero, you're like, oh, that's not what this was supposed to be. It's like almost antithetical to the original concept. But then as I got older past that, I was like, nah, man, Rocky IV is good. And I'm talking about the original cut. I'm talking about the goofy cut. Robot aside, you know, and I'll grant you whatever you want to make fun of it for. You're probably right. But the casting of Dolph Lundgren was really, really revelatory. He always talks about how the way it was conceived was, yes, there was this political idea of like somebody from the U.S. fight somebody from Russia during the Cold War and the politics involved in that. But he had conceived Drago as kind of like a giant hairy guy, like a big wrestler, like a Braun Strowman type of guy. And then when Dolph came in to audition, he was like, oh, my God, like that's a way better idea, which is like, what if it was a man of the future? What if it was a machine? What if it was somebody who was biologically, you know, and with Sputnik and with like, you know, this arms race and the space race, it makes way more sense thematically. And then Rocky is all about the soul and he is all about, you know, nature. And, you know, so then I was like, you know, goofy though this movie may be, that's pretty sophisticated. You know, that's pretty interesting actually. And the fight choreography, that last fight, they marketed this cut of it as it's the best fight in cinematic history. And I'm like, yeah, it is. Like, what beats it? You know, that was 1985 before there was CG, before there was faster cutting. He talks about how, you know, because one of the main things people make fun of that movie for is that the second half of it is montage.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's true. It is. It's like it's one montage after another. But his defense at the time and even now is like, well, it's the fourth movie with the guy and he's fighting Frankenstein's monster. He's fighting a machine. And I always thought it was really cool that you kill Apollo Creed. The first half of the movie is goofy. It is kind of a lot of comic relief. Nobody's taking anything seriously. And then a main character dies. And then the second half is silent. Yeah. You know, like the complexion of the movie changes. And it's just all about like, and Rock, I would even argue that Rocky is sort of a supporting character in the first half of Rocky IV. Really, it's Apollo's movie. They changed that in this cut. I think they put Rocky a little bit more in the center, but in the original cut, he doesn't have as much dialogue. He doesn't appear in most scenes. They don't cut to him as often. And then it very much becomes his movie in the second half, which I always thought was a really neat parlor trick. But, yeah, I thought despite it maybe not being the most, I don't know, indie of all of them or the most classy of all of them, I always thought that it was very artful and probably it helped invent montage cutting and kind of the format that became popularized. It was a mega hit at the time. They made $300 million when $300 million was a lot of money.
Like I said, it's the one that stuck with me the most just because there's a lot of imagery in it that is just so on the nose, like him training in the wilderness and, you know, and then Dolph Lundgren's and all these like technological backlit, smoke-filled rooms and like doing all this training. So like that imagery always stuck out with me.
Did you know he directed it when you were younger?
I did not know that. And yeah. I didn't even know that until I started watching the documentary. I know so little about this movie. Like I said, I watched it 20 years ago. It stuck with me.
But he wrote all of them and then he directed two through four, and then he also directed 6. And then John Avildsen, who also did Karate Kid and Lean on Me and a lot of these 80s films. Good, really good movies. He did 1 and 5. They brought him back for 5 to be like, bring back the old magic. We just did this really weird Cold War movie. you know what? I will, before we get into the meat and potatoes of the cut, I will say this. This is probably something you don't remember. There does exist prior to this a recut of the Rocky IV fight in the form of the recap in Rocky V.
Oh.
Because the brain damage that he sustains in Rocky IV. Well, they don't really talk about it in Rocky IV. They don't give you any info about, like, he's suffering brain damage during this fight. In Rocky V, it's a big thing. He ends up with tremors, and he has to retire. He can't fight another day in his life, which, of course, they retcon by 6, or they kind of, like, skim over. But it's a big deal. And so, and every Rocky movie does a recap of the previous film's fight, at the very least. And so they did it's like a very dramatically cut. It's different music, black and white. Dramatic slow-mo at certain points. And I think more than anything, they were emphasizing when Drago's fist hit his head. So anytime they were hitting his head, they really kind of like tried to make that a focal point. So, and again, Rocky V, not a great movie, but actually kind of a cool different version of the Rocky IV film.
Yeah, in the documentary, I liked how he was talking about how there was so much montage because he was kind of like in the spirit of MTV at the time, because like everything was just so visual and musical, and he was just like, maybe if I like tap into that spirit, like people will be, well, I mean, the returns, I guess his theory was correct, people enjoyed it. But
he had done First Blood, I want to say between Rocky III and Rocky IV, and then he went on to do more Rambo movies after Rocky IV. So Rocky IV is when his physique is at like crazy maximum. That's when you can.
He's a wide boy.
And the abs are insane on both of them and stuff. I mean, I think it's a supplement going on there. but he's talked in detail about, especially in Rocky III, how little he ate. He just wasn't eating, and like especially carbs. Like there's just a zero carb diet. But the point is that once he became an action star, which he really wasn't known for until the Rambo films, his whole life kind of became action movies after that. And the Expendables, he directed the Expendables. He also directed Rambo 4, which is the only Rambo movie he directed.
Yeah, I saw that in theaters. And
in like, oh,
yeah. And yeah. I remember I watched First Blood right before, and it's just like such like cognitive dissonance between those two movies.
Yeah. And it was supposed to sort of like bridge that a little bit, but it didn't. It just Rocky. I don't think Rambo 4 is great, but you can actually tell, I think, in this recut, you can see Rambo 4 and the Expendables influence on it a little bit. You can tell the sorts of things he ended up being influenced by. I'll give just a quick example would be in an action film, crossing the 180 degree line in your cuts. And so for those who don't know, like if you shoot one shot and the action is going from left to right, you know, let's say two people are running left to right. And then in the next shot, two people are running, let's say those same people, it has to be like those same people are running right to left. Like you just literally change the camera angle to 180 degrees in front of them. If you cut between those two, the audience will be confused because you just reversed the direction of the imagery. And in action movies, they've always played more fast and loose with that. As early as like if you go to like Terminator 2, you'll see, you know, like with those truck sequences and stuff, you'll see people crossing the 180 degree line a lot. And I think the reason you get away with it is because disorientation is a feature, not a bug with that sort of thing. But he really, you could tell in the first cut of Rocky IV that they were avoiding that because that's kind of against the rules. And by this point, maybe it's because he was mining for better footage or because he just he was prioritizing the rhythm of the fight or the rhythm of the moment, you know, over everything else. But yeah, he throws caution to the wind and it's cut more like an Expendables movie.
Yeah, I and it didn't bother me. So the only thing that was like noticed, like stuck out to me like a sore thumb was the degraded film. They're very blown out. A lot of them are blown out shots or the exposures.
I think they, so. I, I think they did that digitally. I think that that was actually just a bad judgment call.
You
on
think
their
so?
Part. I agree. It's like it's he later in the documentary he's bemoaning that the skin tones on everybody are very tan or very warm, and he's like repeatedly like doesn't like that, and he keeps wanting to cool the skin tones and make everybody whiter. And,
yeah, it reminds me of when I take a photo in Photoshop and I just like. I do too many things. I stretch the image way too far. And yeah. I see it a lot. It was very distracting, actually, because it's like it's a little a little bit too overexposed in some spots. Yeah, there's some life drain to it, especially because my brain has categorized this as an 80s film on film. So like I expect it to look a certain way. So I expect it to be kind of more flat, more warm, more life, there more life to it. And the fact that it maybe was digitally stretched too far, it really that bothered me a lot with this cut.
Yeah, I think he tried to de-80s it, and you can't de-80s that footage. No. And again, the 80s is kind of embedded in this thing. Like you can't he probably diminished its effect to some degree. He also changed the aspect ratio. It's that cinescope.
Oh, okay.
They bumped the contrast pretty high in most places. I'm telling you, if you scrub through Rambo 4, it kind of.
Oh, really? That's actually very interesting. Yeah. So I didn't really like the color treatment. It didn't look like how I remembered. So I my brain rejected it. But that being said, I think the story itself, I think it rips. Like I feel like it goes really fast, and I like it. Like I like the way that he cut it. I like the decisions he made. I like some of the alternate shots he used.
One of his other big things there was there were some themes for what he was looking for in takes, and one of them was he's decided. And again, this is just like a director changing. I don't know that it's right or wrong necessarily, but. He doesn't like eyeline shots, like medium shots of somebody's eyeline with the camera right in front of them. He feels that it's invasive, especially during like emotional moments. Like, for instance, like when they cut to Adrian during the fight, he wanted to avoid this sort of like right in front of her thing. So he told the editor, he's like, anytime you can find a profile shot or a handheld shot or anything that's more cinema verite, use that instead. Just do a rip and replace of all of those. And so, yeah, so it has, there's definitely that again, I think between that harsh color timing, the more frenetic favoring the more frenetic takes, and then this kind of frenetic editing, you do get more of a kind of action film vibe throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. And it's very, very interesting. Cause then he also said in the documentary that he would linger on shots longer. I didn't necessarily notice it. I felt like it was going pretty fast, so I didn't notice that he was letting some moments breathe a little bit more.
Or he transplanted them. Like there's a scene in the dressing room before Apollo's fight that's cut from this version, but he lifted the audio from it and made it a VO right before Rocky's fight. So he figured, he probably figured like, oh, it sucks in the original cut that Apollo's influence has kind of left Rocky. Like Apollo should be present in the story before Rocky fights Drago, immediately before Rocky. So like he decided to transplant that. Or the big one is because he had to cut out the damn robot. And he decided, he's like, I got to get rid of this robot. This robot.
Everyone keeps talking about this robot. Bearded men on the internet keep complaining about it.
Yeah, this robot's haunting my production. Because he cut that, the robot tends to be in scenes with his son.
Yeah, the son's like barely in this.
Yeah, and then there's exposition that necessarily leaves because the robot was in the shot or whatever. there's a car washing scene, and there's so he what he did instead was he found some other deleted scenes that more or less give you the same information you needed from the scenes that were cut. And they're not the best scenes in the world. Some of them are good. There's one in a kitchen with Adrian that I think gives Adrian a lot more when she's like, look, Apollo thinks he's doing this for political purposes, but he really should think about it more. That gives Adrian a better treatment in my opinion. But I'll say, just on the topic of the robot and the kid, I can't help but in both cuts of this movie be like, this guy doesn't care if he dies, like when he's got a wife and son, which is, you know, which is kind of like sold as virtuous in the film, but like, it's, we all know that this is not virtuous to die when you have a family. But at least in the original cut, they cut to the kid at home cheering him, and he says like, I love you, kid, in the final speech and stuff. That's all gone, and it's all gone probably because the robot is doing 360s in the background of those shots. And the joke always was, wait, if Polly's in Russia, if Adrian's in Russia, who's watching the kid? This movie kind of has this new cut kind of has an answer to that question. One, we see a maid that we've never seen in the original cut in one of the kitchen scenes. So that's reasonable to assume. And two, they never cut back to the kid.
No.
After he leaves the house. So you never have to ask the question. You're never wondering. And while we're on the topic, something that has bothered me my entire life is that the kid, the continuity of Rocky's child through all of the films, let's say through 3, 4, and 5, has always been a problem. He was a baby in 2. Great. He's like 3 in 3. Great. They set up between 3 and 4. It like Rocky got in some, like he got in like a spar with, yep, Apollo. He got a black eye. He came home with that black eye. So we know that it's like the next day or something. And the kid is 9 from here, like 3.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then they do it again. They do it again because he wanted to cast his son, Sage, his unfortunately dead son. His son died a few years ago. He was a good actor too. I liked him in Rocky 5. This is another good thing about Rocky 5. But he's like 14 in that movie. And he comes home on the plane from Russia and outruns this 14-year-old. He's like, Dad! And we just saw him with his robot when he was 9.
Don't care.
So Nino is like, hey, you know what this means? If they never cut back to the kid, maybe he was training in Russia for years.
Well, he's got the beard. He's got the beard and everything after.
Yeah. You can just infer that and you're basically fine. Although I think they still say like, we're going to fight on Christmas Day, which I presume it's Christmas Day of this year and not of 5 years.
Well, they didn't clarify.
They never. Yeah. So you can, in your head canon for, you know, you can replace the old cut with this cut and do that for yourself. But,
that's hilarious.
They also restored a bit of Bill Conti's music from, you know, there's the same musician that does all the score in at least Rocky 1 through 3 and some of 5, and so he's, I think, the only Rocky movie he didn't do music for was 4, because they did all this all this pop music, and they by peppering that in and having sort of quieter scenes and having things end a little quicker, the dramatic stuff feels more like a Rocky movie. I've heard other people say that, and I agree with it. It's not quite as much the outlier now. You could watch this right after watching Rocky 2 and not think it's that weird.
Yeah, it does feel like it has a little more humanity in it. And it's a little more reasonable, I guess.
And even the humorous stuff, like James Brown stopping the whole movie to sing Living in America, was one of those things that people laughed at or were like, what was Stallone thinking? In this one, I think it's because, again, another major narrative change in this one is, I think in the original, Drago had 3 lines. It was like, I must break you, you know.
If he dies, he dies.
Like he said almost nothing in the original, so that every time he spoke, it was very memorable. In this one, they give him a little bit more. There's like times where his wife used to speak, and now
I was going to say, I remember the wife speaking more, and she barely speaks in this.
Yeah. Like the one that stands out is in the original cut, she's the one who says, we did not come here to lose. And now he says, I did not come here to lose. So they have him, they emphasize more that he's a puppet of this government and of these people, and that his internal struggle is like, I want to be my own man, and I can't be my own man in Soviet Russia. And I think by doing that, when he is faced with this kind of mocking crowd in Las Vegas with James Brown coming out and Apollo Creed and you know, with his U.S. top hat dancing and stuff, it feels more xenophobic. It feels more kind of malicious and offensive to him as a, you know, as an individual. So I thought, so even the humorous stuff, had a little bit more depth to it and, you know, I don't know, a little bit more of an edge to it.
And, I thought the ending fight scene felt a little more brutal too. If it, like the sound design felt a little like more immediate, a little more, realistic, maybe a little more brutal, a little,
The big one being the punches. If you go back to the punches in the first one, they sound like thunderclaps.
It was like a cartoon.
And nothing about it feels all that violent. Whereas even when they're like spitting blood and stuff, but in this one, they're just these sort of realistic thuds. And there's something about, and I think they did a better job of if the actor very visibly didn't connect, which was, you know, most punches, they didn't put in a sound effect. So they kind of let it look like it was a miss instead of a connect. And so then it feels like some stuff is missing, some stuff is connecting. And that feels a little bit more like gritty. And the whole movie, frankly, especially Apollo dying, but the whole movie felt more violent.
It felt a little more grounded. And when things did get shocking, they were shocking. And also, like, I felt like there was a turn, you could feel the turn for Drago a little bit more in that final fight, like where he's starting to get his own consciousness.
There's so many great visual ideas in that fight, again, in both cuts that I love. There's one in particular where, you know, it's round 13 or something. It's very deep into the fight. They're both completely swollen. Their legs are wobbly and they're both with their corner men getting cleaned up. And they're not listening to their corner men. They both just kind of veer over and look at the other one like a zombie. Like, you know, at this point, they're kind of like pure instinct, just locked onto each other, just in pure animalistic competition. And which I love. I love that stuff, especially in a Rocky movie, because the Rocky movies are never about like that guy. It's always what that guy represents. Mm. It's always what that, you know, it's never about the championship. It's never about he and I have a feud. It's always about, as they say in Creed, when Rocky's like, you know, look at this guy in the mirror, that's your greatest opponent. It's always about fighting yourself and becoming better than you were before the fight. And in his best movies, the villain goes through the same exact arc, where the villain grows because of the fight as well, which always makes it more profound. And I think, I think that was present in the first one, but it's much more present.
Yeah,
in this one.
I felt it a little bit more because like, I know, but also I'm 20 years older, so I don't know if that's part of it too, where I felt Drago's turn a little bit more, and I felt especially through the battle.
They cut a lot of little performance moments, little tags on lines that didn't really need to be there, that didn't really, just to keep the energy moving. And I don't know if you know the stat, it's something like the runtime of both cuts are almost identical. It's like 93 minutes or something, but this version has 43 unseen, unreleased footage.
That's crazy.
43 minutes. So it's like, so what that means is that it's mostly takes being swapped. Yeah,
that's my feeling, was it was takes being swapped.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really cool. It's just like, you know, I don't think I could do this with any of my films because I don't think we did enough takes.
Yeah,
yeah. There's only so many editing paths.
Well, yeah, even when we were working on, not that like Boxmac Halloween specials are art or anything, but they're a type of art. But it's like, once we get the take, we move on like immediately. Like it's like, oh, right. We got it, move on. We got it, move on.
But then there's other stuff like when you choose to cut can sometimes change the story. And the one that I like the most in this, or the one that I think demonstrates that example the most, is in the original. So again, there's this problem in the movie of both men have families, and ultimately the story kind of like pushes the family away because I don't think it wants to tell that story necessarily, but it can't ignore it completely either. So they always, you know, they had Apollo's wife screaming in the crowd in the first one. And in this one, I actually think that actress gives a really nice performance just in her reaction shots. But Apollo looks out to the crowd, connects with her. She has this really nice, tearful kind of like, hey, are you going to be okay? You know, remember me. She gives off this really cool take that it's kind of like, hey, please remember me. And in the original, he holds up his boxing glove and gives her like a thumbs up and like kind of a strained smile. Like, hey, I'm all right. Try to remember me this way. In this one, they cut it before he pulls up the thumbs up. So he kind of looks at her, awkward smiles, and then quickly turns away. So I think it's communicating like, I'm deciding to disregard my responsibility.
Yeah, that's a very interesting.
But then, you know, what's so cool about this whole saga is that 40 years later, there's this new movie called Creed. And I remember like the, you know, and there's a young man, Michael B. Jordan, who's like, no, my dad died fighting and I'm going to die fighting, you know, something like that. And Rocky, with age, wisdom, incredible perspective, goes, I think your dad would much rather be here with you and me. And that's just so cool that like that you can have this kind of, yeah, this warrior movie, this one, you know, they brought in this theme of the warrior a lot more in this cut. And then you can also have kind of the old man version that's like, hey, son, like, you know, it's not time to make a change. Also, there's a new, the if I can change, you can change, anybody can change speech. Roundly mocked for decades. Funny or Die sketches or College Humor sketches that are like, oh, did Rocky just end the Cold War? It's fine. It's a funny joke. I'll grant you. It's a funny joke. Rocky ended the Cold War. Tee-hee. But they soften the speech. The if I can change, you can change speech. First of all, the takes are a little bit more introspective. If I can change, you can change. Anyone can change. But they prefaced it with a line that was not in the original that to me, like really transforms that scene, which is he goes, my best friend didn't change and he died.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I've never seen that take before. And it was like, well, that puts a different spin on this whole thing, which is like Apollo Creed. I guess I always inferred that from like, well, there's this whole sort of story arc about adapting and Apollo Creed failed to do that. But it's interesting. Like,
oh yeah. It's way more apparent in this cut.
Yeah. There's these like corny, you know, like executive business, like leadership books, but there's one called What Got You Here Will Not Get You There. And it's about how successful people will often think that whatever qualities brought them to their current level of success will get them to their next major accomplishment. And that's often not the case. You have to like adapt from this new point. And I think that's kind of here where it's like, you know, the Apollo that was champ is not the Apollo that can beat this thing.
Yeah.
The first Rocky was based on, or the nugget of the idea came from Muhammad Ali and this brawler, this kind of no-name brawler that knocked him out. And it was this big deal. And of course, then Ali, you know, killed him. But, and Stallone was like, well, that's profound. What if there was a whole story based on that guy's journey to that moment, you know? And similar to that, Rocky IV, he said the nugget was that in World War II, Joe Louis, U.S. champ, versus, I think his name is Max Schmeling, you know, a very Nazi. Yeah. This Nazi boxer who had that, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, man of the future, master race boxer. And it's like, yeah, of course that would be politically significant. If one of Hitler's robots came over here and clobbered our best guy, and that's what happened. Joe Louis was beat. And according to Stallone, Louis then went off for a couple of years and trained like a maniac and came back and knocked out Schmeling in the first round, and Hitler made him persona non grata. But yeah, like in the ways that these like sociopolitical conflicts manifest in the Olympics or in sports, it's actually pretty, I actually think it is pretty politically sophisticated to make a movie about.
Yeah,
that.
Well, it's a very, yeah, very historical, very timeless story.
And Frankenstein, like it's totally Frankenstein. You know, they created him, but there's a soul in there, and it's, you know, no matter how many drugs they pump him with, and no matter how much, you know, they hook him up to machines and stuff, he wants to escape. He wants to live his own life. And again, they did a nice job of bringing that into this one. I always have loved Duke, Apollo's original trainer.
Oh, yeah.
Becomes Rocky's trainer. This dude, this Tony Burton, his performance is so, he is showing up to work in these movies. He's like sweating. He's spitting. and I always loved it, especially in Rocky IV, because I, even though Rocky and Duke knew each other, I feel like they were kind of like Apollo was a mutual friend, and that was their connection. And then it's kind of like, I don't know, it's almost like if like you died and Anna and I had to like connect to like finish your life's work or something. Like it almost feels like that. And Tony is not a boxer, but if he was, he would do it. He would go in there and fight Drago. But since he's not, he has everything, all of the stakes are wrapped up in Rocky. And so he's basically his priest. He's basically, in his corner, like praying with him. They actually cut some, I thought, really nice stuff in the original cut where they have their foreheads touching and they're both going, no pain, yeah. No pain, no pain. And, like he can't go through hell with him, but he can get really close, And there's it's so ridiculous, but there's shots of him. Like when everybody jumps in the ring, cause they start brawling with each other, Tony fights one of the corner men. Pauly becomes his corner man or one of his corner men in Rocky III. And by the time you get to Rocky IV, Mickey's dead. Mickey's crew is no longer there. Apollo is dead. And so it's really just Tony and Pauly. Yeah. It's kind of just like the remnant, it's like, the people who have always been there are the only ones left. And when they have that massive propagandist poster of Drago go up and the Soviet national anthem is playing and they're in this crowd of people that very well may kill the three of them, and get away with it. There's like this one shot of Pauly, like kind of clutching the American flag towel. And Tony is kind of trying to look brave too, but it's just like, these two dudes, especially Pauly, who are just like, how the f*** did I get here? I am a long way from Philadelphia. And I've always loved that. And they also, when Rocky wins in this one, they use a very different take. In the original, he kind of just stands still in the middle of the ring and raises his arms. Like, he just can't believe that he's still standing. In this one, he does this kind of like crazy run around the ring and then leaps into Duke's arms. And which is cool. I like both. They're both cool. But in this one, they cut to Pauly having this kind of like, I can't believe it sort of private laugh to himself. Just a really nice performance moment. I totally get why they put that in. I think it's just really a really nice touch. And then they also let at the very end, they let it run a little longer where Rocky kind of walks around the ring and he sort of touches gloves with Drago. And so again, that feels a bit more Rocky I or Rocky II. It doesn't just kind of end on this patriotic note of like, now Russia is America.
Yeah, or Russia, so, whatever. Russia has been defeated. And
because they, in this new version, they recap a lot of Rocky III because they wanted to bring in Apollo's, they wanted to make Apollo central to the narrative and remind you why he was so important to Rocky. Which isn't done in the original. They play Eye of the Tiger and recap the Rocky III fight. In this one, they play out like a whole dialogue scene from Rocky III and kind of remind you. But instead of playing Eye of the Tiger during that, they play Sweetest Victory by Touch. Sweetest victory, I love you more than love itself. Because that was on the Rocky IV soundtrack originally, but they never actually put it in the movie. Now it's in the actual movie. Kind of cute. But you can't have Rocky IV without Eye of the Tiger. So they stick Eye of the Tiger at the end when he, when the Politburo has been defeated, which I think is genius. I was really like pumped when they rolled in. Bow, 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 bow. Oh, I think he also, Stallone, fit in some present day ADR.
Yeah, is it like when he, there's like voiceover, like when he's like in his head,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he's like, don't be scared, breathe. That's clearly 74-year-old.
Yeah, it sounds like present day VO. I noticed that too.
Breathe, don't be scared. You can do it.
I could be totally wrong about this. But there's a, I think there's a couple of times, like in the restored scenes, the scenes that had never appeared before. There's one in particular where he's like, relax, I'll be right back. Like to go to the kitchen.
Just relax, I'll be right back.
I wonder if they didn't have a clean audio take in the original, or they felt like they needed to fit that in to explain where the hell he's going. Or maybe he said, like, hang out with your robot, I'll be right back. And they had to like get rid of the robot reference or something. But it sounded like a maybe a modern day loop.
Yeah. I think this is worth watching, like, just as an academic experience. Like, I think you should watch this movie. I think you should watch the documentary. I think it's like the best film class you'll have, you know?
Totally. Oh, totally. Yeah. Just listening to him talk, like kind of mumble his way through the decisions he's making is fascinating. And if you can somehow track them to the actual final cut, all the better. And yeah. And you know, he said himself, he's like, you never pull the plug. You know, it's the old thing of like filmmakers never done. They run out of time. The George Lucas kind of thing. And it's very true. And it's even more true than that, because that implies that like there is an end destination, kind of, you know, a conceptual end destination. You just never get to it. But it's more like, no, 40 years ago, you were this person and you made this movie. And 40 years later, you're this person and you made this movie. And if he could live another 40 years, he'd be a different person. He would make a different movie. I don't agree with everything that this version of the director did, you know, but it is the version that this director would do, which is just really, really cool. You know, I mean, obviously revisiting some of my old work and worrying about, you know, how I was going to feel about it. And you do have to make peace to some degree with like, well, that's who I was. That was the best decision I could have made at the time.
When you had 9 days to shoot a film, those are the decisions you had to make.
Yeah. Or that's what I thought was important. And I've learned something else is important, or, you know, whatever. He says it in the documentary. He's like, I wish I had this perspective, but I didn't. I had no choice but to make that movie. That was the limiter was me. And it's not something that I can manufacture. It's something 40 years of wisdom can only change.
Nuts.
You know,
that's nuts. You're nuts.
Yeah. Oh, you're nuts. Oh, you're nuts. I've seen this twice now. I watched it once on the elliptical working out, and I watched it once with Nina. And you could argue that working out and watching a movie doesn't give the film its full due. But can we make an exception for this film? Is there any better way to watch this film than while working out?
Yeah. I don't know.
Can you think of anything in pop culture that would have done more for fitness than the Rocky series? Like, how many people worked out because of
the Rocky movies? I think the Rocky movies just perfected like sports in general. It did wonders for all sports forever in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's for sure. When I went there in 06, there's a video of it to the steps. And I love, by the way, this never occurred to me, but that obviously the iconic thing is him running up the steps. And in this one, it's him running up a mountain in the middle of the Soviet Union. I just love that is kind of a good metaphor for where the series started and where it went. It was like, well, what if we ran up to the peak of a mountain? How about that? Yeah, when I went there, it was the Rocky statue was there. And the place was flooded with people running up, jogging up those steps.
It's kind of surreal, really. See this backdrop.
Putting their hands up in the air. And that was a long time ago, and I'm sure they're still doing it today. And I'm sure they'll still be doing it 20, 40, 60 years from now. It's an incredible thing that he's created, you know, that has no special effects in it, that is not based on any prior properties. It's simply about the human spirit. That's all it is. There's nothing in life that you can't learn from a Rocky movie. That's what I always say.
It's such a, I love this recut just for the fact that it exists, because it just so rarely. This is such a rare thing that somebody 40 years later basically recuts their movie from all the footage.
There you go. COVID has given us three beautiful gifts: my weight loss, the Rocky IV recut, and Peacemaker.
That's true. That's all I got to say about that.
The great recut.
The great recut.
Subscribe to Red Cow Entertainment on Patreon for full episodes every other week. Are you